This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
We have to decide whether we're going to retain the monarchy or not. I think the Prime Minister's opinion was very wise, because we got to bear in mind we had problems with certain islands in the Bahamas here who dug their feet in, and we had certain threats which I at one day we have to speak of. And the Prime Minister thought that maybe if he offered them the monarchy, they might feel themselves more comfortable and they avoid any tragedies, bloodshed, which would then be felt. Because, of course, those who were opposed to independence very strongly bought it and had engaged mercenaries who had trained and fought in Africa, and they were killers. And so we thought we'd offer them something, which didn't mean very much. And I think through that, the Prime Minister, Pittlingham, was able to ease the, and we slid into independence. Mind the British told us that we were making a mistake because it may infect for future generation behavior. They may not understand what we were getting into by retaining the monarchy. They wouldn't understand it. It's really, I wouldn't call it a fiction, but it's pretty close to it. They wouldn't understand it. And maybe, I don't know whether they're right or not yet, but we opted for the monarchy. And in fact, everything went smoothly. We didn't have any.
The governor had to leave because once you were independent.
Well, the particular governor. They're two different things. The governor, the colonial governor, is not. The governor general is not a successor to the Roman. To the governor. A colonial governor. He's not a successor.
Right.
He's a different creature completely.
So one is
governor general.
Right.
The terms may cause a confusion. Yes, it's a confusion. The term is a confusion. Governor general and governor are two different things. The British governor was the British administrator. A governor general is a part of the monarchy. It represents the monarchy in a way which the governor did not. Now, the Queen of England is not Queen of the Bahamas. You got to bear that in mind. It happens to be the same person, Bahamas. When she comes here, she's no longer Queen of the Bahamas. She's not Queen of England. She's Queen of the Bahamas. So she's not Queen of England. See, that is where the confusion may arise. I heard a teacher telling someone about Commonwealth Day. They're saying, oh, you know, when you grow up and you want to be free, you're married, but you don't want to leave your father's coattail, you join the Commonwealth. Well, we did join the Commonwealth, but there's a misconception. First of all, it's not a British Commonwealth. It's a Commonwealth of nations which Britain is only a member. It's an important member, mind you, and Britain could be put out of the Commonwealth. And in fact, some African countries were threatening to put Britain out of the Commonwealth over the question of Rhodesia and South Africa, where the British was dragging their feet. You remember Prime Minister Pinling was at that time leader of the, he was chairman of the Commonwealth, chairman. And under his chairmanship, the Commonwealth proposed then to dismantle, the majority of Commonwealth members proposed to dismantle the illegal regime and racist regime of South Africa and the illegal and racist regime of Rhodesia, Southern Rhodesia. Rhodesia had declared independence from Britain, unilateral independence, But we needed the British support. And the Prime Minister, Mrs. Margaret Thatcher, was, I think they thought she might have been dragging her feet. But the Commonwealth was determined that the end has come for this racist regime in South Africa, and it must be one. And the Prime Minister took leadership.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Political Review for today, Sunday, the 8th of August, the year of our Lord, 2021. And we open the show this week with the voices of two great Bahamians, the late Miles Monroe, who was interviewing the today's conversation, the now late Arthur A.D. Hanna, former Governor General, former Minister of Finance, former Minister of Education, former Deputy Prime Minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, former Member of Parliament, and a good Acklands boy. Last week, this time, during my show, I got the word that the Honorable A.D. Hanna had passed at 93 years of age. And it was incredibly difficult to finish the show because A.D. meant a lot to me personally and to my family. His son, Dion, or A.D. Jr., is my uncle, married to my mother's sister, and as a matter of family, my cousins and siblings and I spent a bit of time as kids on the Hanna Road farm. We would, enjoy swimming in the sea there. But more often than not, while my cousins or siblings would be outside swimming, I would sit in the corner of the living room and listen to conversation and debate amongst A.D. and his children, Glennis and Uncle Dion and Uncle Sean, Uncle Mark, Aunt Dawn. And was where my love of politics really was born. Just sitting and enjoying those conversations and soaking up that fervor for national advancement and development, and the towering intellects of the people in that family. And to all of his children and to all of his family, I offer my deepest condolences. As I say, he was like a surrogate grandfather to me, and I considered him a friend.
And one of the things that the late Pastor Miles was talking to A.D. Hannah about during the time, this conversation while Mr. Hannah was serving as Governor General, was the difference between the position of the governor of the Bahamas as a British colony and the position of the Governor General in an independent Bahamas. And what I found fascinating and why I played that clip was because in addition to refuting the idea that the Governor General is merely a successor to the position of colonial governor, A.D. went to great lengths to explain the significant and fundamental differences between those two positions. But low-key, he was also giving a bit of a on what the Bahamas is versus how Bahamians tend to see the Bahamas. And one of the important things that came through in listening back to that conversation, and that piece of the conversation in particular, which opened the show today, is that we as a people are quite insular. And we tend to think of the Bahamas only in terms of how it affects us, how life affects us. But if you listen to the conversation that AD had with Pastor Miles, there is much more to the Bahamas than the domestic happenings. He recalls the fact that Sir Lyndon served, it's a rotating chairmanship, but nonetheless, during Sir Lyndon's chairmanship of the Commonwealth, there was a significant move towards ending the apartheid regime in South Africa and supporting the independence of Rhodesia. And the Bahamas stood on the world stage in a very potent and influential way to facilitate the gathering of support for, in a way that is perhaps not still, in my view, not well understood in by Bahamians in country. There are 400,000 of us or so, and yet a country the size of a medium-sized city in some of these big countries had a thumb on the scale that ended an evil regime on the other side of the world. That's a level of influence and a level of ability to change the shape of the world that AD recognized the Bahamas had and took in stride as the right and responsibility of the Bahamas as a member of the Commonwealth, member of the Community of Nations. It is almost unfathomable to imagine, unless you are a student of history and you realize it did happen. But that is the level of influence and power that the Bahamas has as a member of the Community of Nations. And the independence, the search journey towards independence of the Bahamas was another sort of angle of the conversation that Pastor Miles and AD shared. And I played the clip that I chose the first clip to highlight something that I think is still a question or a matter for us to deal with as we consider the Bahamas, the legacy of A.D. Hanna and his generation as a framer of our Constitution and as a member of the government that sort of laid the foundation for the modern Bahamas as it exists. And what that is a recommendation by recalling certain incidents. AD sort of intimated that there are parts of our own history that we have yet to really grapple with and learn from. And here's, he talked about the fact that there was, as the Bahamas started to contemplate independence seriously, there were a few pockets of extreme resistance to the idea of independence, only because these pockets of resistance did not wish to sever ties with I guess we'll call it Mother England for the purpose of this conversation. And one of the things that AD talked about was the fact that this idea of independence while maintaining the monarchy was a compromise by Sir Lyndon in order to gain the support of those who had been in opposition to independence on the basis of the fact that they did not want to sever ties with the crown. And so we maintain the monarchy even as we are an independent country, purely as a matter of political compromise in order to avoid what AD says would definitely have been bloodshed and other violence had the Bahamas persisted on moving to independence without first solidifying that internal agreement. And one of the things that I thought was fascinating in that conversation, I encourage you to look it up. It's on YouTube. It's a 2007 conversation between the late Miles Monroe and A.D. Hanna about the role of the Governor General. And you should, it's about an hour long. You should listen to it. But one of the fascinating things that they mentioned, that A.D. mentioned, was that the Brits thought that for the Bahamas to maintain the monarchy was actually a mistake, because while it was necessary to get support in the present moment, future generations would not understand what had been done and why, and there would be confusion about the Bahamas as an independent nation and still maintaining ties to the monarchy. I think AD was reluctant to say so, but later on in the conversation, I think he admits that the Brits were right. That confusion absolutely exists to this day. And it's a fascinating bit of insight. The growth of the modern Bahamas and the fact that there are some unhealed wounds in our national psyche, some things that need resolution in order for us to truly, I think, know ourselves well enough to securely plot a path for development that is longer than 5-10 years. And I was very interested to hear that part of the conversation and to hear AD's openness with his own questions about the course of direction that the government he was a part of chose to undertake. And later on in the conversation, he's very blunt. He said, you know, I voted for the monarchy, supported it. I can't back away from it now. And he was that kind of man. You know, whatever he supported, he supported. And that that is that kind of resolute integrity is something that I ascribe to him and aspire to see in my own life, and I recommend to all of those who are practicing the art of politics now to be resolute, to support what you support, and if you're wrong, own up to your wrong and change your direction, but don't be a wind in the willow. Stand for what you stand for. So I want to play another clip from that interview. It's a couple of minutes later on in the interview. And during the second clip, he gets a little deeper into this question about independence and the monarchy. So producer, if you could go ahead and roll that second clip for us now, I'd be grateful.
Let me say, I think that's a misconception. The governor of the Bahamas, a British governor, the governor general is not a successor to the British governor.
Right.
It's not a successor. It's a different creature altogether. It's nothing at all to do with him. The governor general was a British person administering. The governor was a British person administering the Bahamas, right, or part of the administration.
When independence came,
the British gone. The British gone.
Yeah.
No, the British gone.
Right.
The British had gone. Even the land they owned was no longer their land. Mm-hmm. They couldn't own any land in the Bahamas, mm-hmm, unless the government allowed them to own it. And the government said, "Well, you could own some if you want something for your office, you know." Mm-hmm. But the British is gone. They're gone.
Everything is.
Nothing that they have left there now. What we did, similar to what India did, really. The last viceroy of India became the first president of India. And the last governor for a short while, a few months, became the governor general of the Bahamas. You see, I think Prime Minister Pinling want to recognize him for the assistance that he offered them on the way to independence.
Transition period.
Yes. Yeah, it wasn't a transition, the transition was complete.
Okay.
He was no longer a governor.
Okay.
His loyalty now was to the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't long, because after that, Sir Milo Butler took over immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the confusion is, it sounded like the word sounds alike.
Right. But it's
completely
different.
Two different things. Mm-hmm. The governor general is not a successor to the British governor.
Right.
He is the president of the Bahamas. He's akin to the president of the Bahamas. We call him Governor General. Because we retain the monarchy. You see? Because we retain the monarchy, we call him the Governor General. But he acts as a president without power. Not all power. His power is limited. He has to decide who's prime minister, for instance. Well, that's an easy one. Whoever's elected, it makes sense for him to choose that as prime minister. If he chose the wrong one, that prime minister wouldn't last 2 minutes in the House of Assembly. He would last two in Parliament, because it'd be a vote of confidence against him right away, because it'd be a bad choice. Sometimes you have difficulty in deciding who's leading. He's all Parliament. He calls for a new election. In the case of Thai, for instance.
So if there was a tie in the next election, you would be responsible for deciding what
happens. What happens after that? Yes, somebody got to decide it. You can't leave it to the contestant to decide it. You know, and then you have to decide it according to the rules, I imagine, which would make sense. So in many cases, his powers are limited. He has powers of his staff. He can hire and fire them. This is charge on a consolidated fund. So we don't really need Parliament to run. To run the governorship. Of course, it makes sense. To get the finance minister to involve. You know, because he's the one who got the money. But he can go in credit from someplace, and the governor has to pay. But of course, we follow the rules. You know. They say, now look, this is all I can afford to have, let you have, and this is my budget. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. One last question. How have you been, what has been your experience so far being governor, and how do you feel about the Bahamas going forward? What do you see for this country?
Well, first of all, I think the British was right. Because we choose the monarchy, in a growing society, trying to build a new country. I think we might have been misleading our people about this Governor General. We have the problem with the wards, for instance. Now, there's no constitutional reason why we should accept the wards. But the British said you could have them if you want them. So the British allow us to use their award if we want to. So that's up to the government of the day whether they want to use it or not. And also the individual whether he's interested or not. They make sure that you want it before you can use it. Things like that. So we have difficulty in creating our own awards. You know, because the British has ancient awards which people prefer. Nothing wrong with it, I don't suppose, for those who want it. But basically, as I see it, we must first get over to our people what a monarchy is. That the Bahamas is a free and sovereign state. It can get rid of the monarchy anytime it wants. It's up to the people of the Bahamas. That the Queen of England is not Queen of the Bahamas. But she's Queen of England, and when she comes here, she's Queen of the Bahamas, but she's not Queen of England when she's here. Yeah, when she comes in, we salute her. Her anthem is to lift up your heads to the rising sun. That's a national anthem, not God Save the Queen.
That's important to me.
Yeah, that's a national anthem. And when she gets out there and they blow up the, what's his name, and give the royal salute, you know, lead on Bahamas land.
That's it.
Yeah. So that the people don't understand it. But Paul Adley did tell me, he says his experience has been that you'd be surprised to know how much this is misunderstood.
Yes.
You decided to know how it's misunderstood.
What's your hope for the future of the Bahamas?
Well, as I said, the Bahamas, we've got to think that we here in this generation are guardians of the future of our people. We cannot destroy their future. We got to preserve the country for future generations and not use it up for this generation. You know, and I think successive government must learn that. And their eagerness to be reelected, they don't destroy the future of those who are coming behind us. I learned that long ago. Years ago, I told this story over good. I was campaigning, and we were in Savannah Sound, and in the back of Savannah Sound, Finley was making a speech. I found a book that I was looking for all those years. I was a Greek scholar. I was trying to look at all these years. One of Xenophon, I think Xenophon and Biases. And I opened it. I wonder what this is doing in a primary school. Well, it was an all-age school. And I give you the translation exactly as it says. It's in Greek. As I open it, there was it. It says, if you know what you have to do, and you do your best to do it, God may grant prosperity to some of you, though not all. Well, I said, I wonder why, if I do my best, why wouldn't God give me prosperity? I said, this must be revelation for me when I saw it. What that mean was this, what I figured it mean was this, if you do what you have to do, don't look for any reward. Just do your best what you have to do. If you know what you have to do and you do your best to do it, God may grant prosperity to some of you, though not all. That's exactly what it says. And I wanted to take this book. I said, no, that would be stealing. I'd leave the book. But I couldn't find the book anywhere. It's one of the books that he was a Greek historian. And, you know, because his language is a beautiful language. You know, I tried to translate it as best I could. But, and that tells me one thing. It says, this is what we have to do. We do our best. Don't worry about what you're going to get for it because you're going to make a mistake. You see? And you're going to do something wrong. If you're looking for reward, you can do something wrong. And I found it, and I found it when I became a minister, some years later, when I decided when it was what to do, say, what is the right thing to do? You know what is right. And you do it. Don't care what anybody else say. You may not get elected, but at least you do the right thing. And so that has been, I was not popular, a number of things, but I did what I thought we had the right to do. We moved independent, wasn't popular. We sold it, I sold it to my constituents because it was the right thing to do. I told them that even there's no substitute for freedom, that even the best fed men. And
well, I think you did the right thing.
Yeah.
Today, the Bahamas is evidence that you and your colleagues at that time, even against opposition and criticism, we are proof that you did the right thing.
I think we did, yeah.
And I think on the behalf of the Haitian people again,
yeah,
as a generation that have benefited from your decisions, yeah, and your colleagues, I want to say thank you for doing the right thing without expecting benefit.
You didn't get any.
And obviously God has prospered you. You're one of those he prospered. Because today you sit in this chair, which is the most honorable chair in our nation.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to take a short break just now. And hopefully when we return, we'll have a special guest with us who can help us expound on the life and of the Honorable Arthur D. Hannah. And we'll take that break right now. Thank you so much.
And Enjoy an elevated mobile experience with BTC giving you
unlimited talk for the best conversations,
unlimited data for all your online fun,
and unlimited roaming to stay connected while overseas
for just $50 per line.
Unlock unlimited mobile talk, data, and roaming when you sign up for BTC Superfast Fiber Internet with speed starting at 100 megabits per second. Enjoy more great savings and value. Upgrade or sign up today. Visit any BTC store or BTCBahamas.com. Conditions apply.
As a registered nurse, I face an increased risk of exposure to the COVID-19 virus. There are times when I have been deployed to the Lyndon Pidling International Airport during the pandemic, and I have been able to provide care for our visitors, guests, and returning residents and citizens, as well as airport staff. I am also fortunate to provide care to the elderly and others who are considered high risk for severe COVID illness. Patients put their trust in me as a caregiver, and this was the deciding factor for me to get vaccinated against COVID-19. I did the research. I weighed the risk of vaccination versus the risk of serious illness, and it only made sense to be fully vaccinated. My vaccination doesn't just mean death. It protects my patients, and it also protects my 89-year-old mother. As a frontline health worker, I urge you to get vaccinated. Together, we can fight the spread of COVID-19 in the Bahamas.
This message has been brought to you by the Public Hospitals Authority and the Sandilands Rehabilitation Center.
Welcome back to the Political Review. My name is Kay Quincy Parker. I am your host, and I am glad that you are with us today. Today we are celebrating the life of the late A.D. Hanna, a surrogate grandfather to me, and one of my political teachers. And I am delighted to be joined by the chairman of the Progressive Liberal Party, Mr. Fred Mitchell, to have a discussion about the life and legacy of A.D. Hanna. And Mr. Mitchell, welcome again to the Political Review.
Great, thank you. I'm sorry, I'm mobile in a car, but the transmission may not be the best, but I hope you, and that, of course, is always a time constraint. But yeah, it's, we describe him in our official statement as the lion of the Progressive Liberal Party. And I think there are many, many examples of why.
What do you think the average person listening to the show today should know? Like, if you have to really sort of figure out like two or three points that as a Bahamian you need to know about A.D. Hanna, what would they be?
Well, the fact is, people ought to understand that the country is just 48 years old. The legal entity known as the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, where people could call themselves Bahamian with a Bahamian passport and a Bahamian identity, is just 48 years old. And that project, for good or ill, and I think it is for good, is one that was fostered, promoted, fought for by A.D. Hanna, and of course his colleagues in that generation. So one of the most moving things for me in the wake of his death was the very next morning, or it could have been the same day, Stephen Gardner is able to stand on the medal platform at the Olympics in faraway Tokyo, Japan, and say, I am a Bahamian, and I have won a gold medal for the Bahamas. And that was made possible his identity as a behavior was made possible because of men like A.D. Hanna. And A.D. Hanna, Carlton Francis, were those who led the fight for independence, who said, no question, we must be an independent nation. Credited with being the one who had the sales craft, who sold the project to the country at large. But the man, or the two men that people say really pushed this, was A.D. Hanna, Carlton Francis. And so we owe that first to him. Then secondly, I think people, of course, it's 48 years, so that's a generation and a half, depending on how you define these things. But many people do not actually remember what this country was like before 1967. First of all, 18-year-olds didn't have the vote. That came because of 1967 and the majority rule government. And the majority rule government made some fundamental changes, which may seem small now, but fundamental changes in the way the country was actually run. For example, the government high school, which was the Bahamas government that allowed people after the age of 14 to have a secondary education and then prepare for college and university. If you didn't go to that school, you had to find the money to go to St. Augustine's. Queen's College excluded black people, or St. Andrew's excluded black people, or you went to St. John's. The Baptist also formed a school. But if you were a public student, the only senior school was the government high school, and they took in 25 students a year. So, you know, very difficult to get in. And if you wanted to do A-levels, you had to pay. Well, Arthur Hanna and his colleagues, Arthur Hanna was the Minister of Education, decided that the Bahamas ought to switch to a comprehensive system of education so that secondary schools were built throughout the country for the first time. And now every island in the country, without exception, has a secondary school. And with one or two exceptions, the all-age school has died. That was due to Arthur Hanna and his colleagues. But I think people would also say that the signature policy, the one which is tied inextricably to Arthur Hanna, is the policy of Bahamianization, which he wielded deftly as the minister responsible for home affairs and thus for immigration. He told me a story about 1967. There was a strike at Paradise Island, then Britannia Hotel. And he said Jim Crosby, who was the American who owned the hotel, came to the government, this was shortly after they won office in 67, and said, look, if the government does not get the hotel union to stop this strike, we are going to close our business down here and close the hotel in the Bahamas. And he said, his response to it, well, if that's what you wish, close the hotel. Close it. Of course, it wasn't closed. The hotel is still here, hasn't gone anywhere. But that was Arthur Hanna. You couldn't threaten him, you couldn't blackmail him. He was highly principled. And Bahamianization made it possible for the black middle class, I would say more broadly, the middle class of the Bahamas, to increase and multiply through education, through the skillful use of saying, you have to train a Bahamian to do it. And you can't get work permits after a certain time if you don't do it. That was Arthur Hanna. The final thing I would like to put to his account is the invention of the social safety net, quite apart from national insurance, because it was realized that some people fell below the poverty line, and the state had to intervene to help those who could not help themselves. And so Lyndon and his colleagues came up with a social safety net, and Arthur Hanna was the Minister of Finance. And he and his officials at the Ministry of Finance designed the present system of assistance, which people get in social services. And by Hubert Ingram, who were the ministers who were responsible for various forms of assistance. But those forms of assistance were drafted, developed, worked on by Arthur Hanna as the Minister of Finance. So that's quite a lot. He wasn't number one. He was number two. But as you know, very often the number two is the fellow that gets to do much of the heavy lifting. And it is to his credit that we have many of the systems that we have today. So I think that sums up what I think.
Yeah, that's a fair summary. And I agree with you. Number two is usually the real heavy lifter. You know, number one gets the glory, but number two gets the sweat.
That's right. But
one of the things that I want to ask about is legacy in terms of the modern Bahamas. You've laid out some of the things that he did, that he initiated, that have lasted and helped to shape who we are as a nation. I wonder what you think politically his legacy is, given your seat as the chairman of the party that he was so instrumental in building and forging.
Well, I think his legacy is summed up in Pat Ramings, the line in Pat Ramings' poem, "I am a Bahamian." And, you know, he's very particular. We had to fight to ask him to accept the post of governor general because he was a Republican with a small R. But he agreed to be the Queen's representative. And the one thing he did agree, what we did agree with him is that he would not take the knighthood. So thus, he never became Sir Arthur. But you know, instead, the honor of honorable for life had been conferred in office as a result of serving as minister for 10 years. So he was the Honorable A.D. Hanna. And then, of course, he was conferred with the highest honor, but for one, in the National Honor System, so that he is now Most Honorable Arthur D. Hanna. So he would, for example, given the American fashion of changing up how you sing the national anthem, as if you're singing an aria, he would often go up to the police officers after they were finished singing. And the crowd, of course, was really pleased at how well it was done. And he would say, as Governor General, "Congratulations, you sounded great, but you didn't sing the national anthem." And they would look at him. And he said, "But that's not how Timothy Gibson wrote it. You, according to him, you had to sing the national anthem exactly how Timothy Gibson wrote it, because that's the approved national anthem." And he, of course, the other side was, you know, he was a bit of a classical scholar himself, both classical music and the classics, the literature. He knew Latin and Greek, and was often heard quoting from various Greek or Roman classical authors. His son Sean trained him as a pianist, a classical grand in his own house. He was just well-rounded, but much of what is known about him has to do with his public life as a public official, but he was more broadly based than that.
I used to sit under that grand piano and listen to him row with Sean and the rest of them. And I was a kid. Yeah. I was telling folks about that at the beginning of the show. The question though is, we don't really have, you know, I mean, it, as you say, it's been a generation, so, or a generation and a half, if you shorten the time frame. But is there someone or someone's who you think may have picked up AD's mantle or his basket and trying to carry it further down the road?
I don't know whether there's a specific person, but, you know, I think that people like Alfred Sears are closely in that mold. And, you know, they're very much interested in carrying on the nationalist project. This is a space which has developed for the people who live here. And I think that Mr. Hanna's legacy is for people to pick up that. And I think Alfred Sears is quite close to that. I think, you know, who remains, and of course, Alfred remains in public life. Others have retired. But it seems to me that one of the things we have to do, and this is why I am the recent gift of Sir Franklin and Lady Wilson to the University of the Bahamas, a gift of $350,000 to sponsor prizes and production works for 7 writers to talk about the modern political history of the country. There'll be a competition and there'll be prizes and their works will be published, because there have been many authors about the pre-1967 period, but post-1967, how all of that unfolded and why we are where we are, there's a dearth of material on it. So I want to thank Sir Franklin and Lady Wilson and Dr. Chris Curry, Dr. Rodney Smith, Dr. Nicolette Bethel for coming up with this effort, which is to mark the 50th anniversary of our independence, which will be in 2 years' time, because we need a marker to say, well, okay, we've now gone 50 years. Where are we? What does it all mean? Where have we come from? Where are we going? And the writers are going to be an integral part of that. And so they have to pick up that mantle. We often asked him why he would write a book, and he would say, no, I can't do that. There's too many of the people who are alive. When I tell the truth, they wouldn't speak to me anymore. So that was his rejoinder. But I think that my own thing about going back into government is I hope that we can hire writers at least to work with the former prime ministers to record their memoirs for them on why they made the decisions that they did. I mean, some ministers have already done it. Bradley Roberts did a book. Ivy Dumont's done a book. Saul Turnquest has done a book. Sir Clifford Darling has done a book. Sir Clement Maynard has done a book. And all of those are very valuable. So it'd be good for a prime minister to sit down with a writer and tell the story of his prime ministership. And that needs to be done with such a person like Arthur Hanna, who didn't write his memoirs, but so much of what transpired. I mean, I knew all of these people quite intimately. I was very interested in Loftus Roker's comments. You know, Roker, when I was a young man, appointed me to the board of Patelco when I was like 22 or 23, something like that. And I used to meet him every morning before work started around 7 o'clock in the morning. So I knew of the alliance between himself and Hanna in the cabinet, in Pidling's cabinet. And, you know, you form these alliances. And so another alliance, which is pretty well known, or not, may not be so well known, is the alliance and the mentorship which he gave to both Perry Christie and Hubert Ingraham when they joined the cabinet. Ingraham joined the cabinet in 82. Christie joined the cabinet in 77. And much of the success of their ministries came because he, as Minister of Finance, adopted them, so to speak. And in our conventions, at the PLB's conventions, there was always a lineup with Hanna and his allies on one side, and Pindling and his allies on the other side. And once I got caught up in the middle of this, that day on the floor of the convention. But nevertheless, I survived. all of this is a great social history, which at some point should be told about why things developed the way they did.
Yeah, I agree. And for the record, the prime ministers should not, they shouldn't sit with hagiographers, right? They should sit with journalists who have long teeth, sharp memories, and very, very ready pens.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that tendency to look at your memories through rose-colored glasses will need right. to be challenged, you know? I can see that.
Right. Well, I thought the Creighton work on Sir Lyndon Pinley, which was commissioned, of course, I found there were too many errors in it, and it needs to be, those errors need to be corrected, so you have to be very careful. But, of course, part of it has to do with the pressure to produce it, because, of course, he was nearing the end of his life at the time, and I think, you know, some things got missed. But nevertheless, it is a very valuable work as well.
Yeah. So the challenge is that, not the challenge is the way I'd like to phrase it in terms of issuing a challenge. He's from Acklands, right. and not from a rich Acklands family, if there is, you know, such a thing.
Yeah.
And from Acklands, as have so many Bahamians, right? They start off in these small islands, and based on whatever greatness is it lies in them, they rise to these unprecedented heights and become these great lights by which we as a nation navigate. And I wonder, as we are celebrating AD today, you know, what are you seeing on the horizon that tells you that his legacy
it's a challenge. It's a challenge, I think, which I put to this generation of leaders coming up. You know, you may know Justin Smith, Danielle Evans, Tashaun Mott, Ahmaud Burns, Duran Saunders, all these people within 10 years or so. And then you have our candidates like Joe Beth, Kobe Davis, and Clay Sweeting. Within 10 years will be the movers and shakers of the country. And what I say to yourself this question, Sir Clifford Darling was from Chester's Acklands, which is a humble part of Acklands even today, one of the remote settlements in the country. Arthur Hanna was from Pompey Bay, another remote part of the country. And yet, they dared to think that they could challenge the status quo. And they did challenge the status quo and brought it to its knees. Sir Clifford Darling had an eighth grade education. Arthur Hanna was more fortunate. He was able to study law and come back. But they worked together. And something that seemed impregnable, they were able to bring it down and change a whole country, change a territory, and create a country. And today, people with better educations, more money, more access to technology are cowering in their boots because they're afraid that some government is going to take some retaliatory action against them for taking a stand. And, you know, my view is that you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound, and you have to take risks to be successful, and that's just the nature of public life and politics. So I'm hoping that if these people understand the sacrifices that these folk made in the previous generation, like Arthur Hanna, that they adopt those methodologies, and we can only get a stronger country, because it hasn't changed. People still have designs on this country. Still, people still have designs on us as a people. And you've got to be able to defend the country. You've got to be able to defend the country. And just the simple act, you know, I think one day, I mean, I don't know if she's interested in politics, but I mentioned for both Mr. Gardner and Shawnee Miller And I said to her before we parted that one day I hoped that she would be a minister of sports for this country. That would be a fitting passage for her career, because it's clear that sports is an important key to people's progress in education, in enhancing their wealth and well-being, and in defending our country around the world. I mean, nothing, you couldn't buy the uplift that the gold medal victories of those two young people did for this country in the midst of all this pandemic. You know, Steve Gardner on the platform and the Bahamian national anthem being sung or played, and Shaunae Miller the next day. This is just remarkable for a small group of people, 400,000 on some rock and rocky outcrops in the North Atlantic. And we've been able to forge this identity. And we want to stay here. And there's so many existential threats, the environment, the over regulatory reach of the developed countries. And who's going to defend us against that? But the youngsters who are coming up behind us, because those of us who are moving off the scene have to hand the country the same way Hannah and Pindling and Roca and all of those tried to train us to take the roles that we have today.
Yeah. Well, so, to be clear, it is true the Bahamas won the Olympics, and I agree with that sentiment very much.
I have to head out to another meeting, but I'm happy for this opportunity. Arthur Hannah, I should say it partly, I should disclose my interest. He grew up in my grandmother's house when he went to the government high school. Wendy, I didn't know her. She died before I was born. My great-grandfather, I believe, and his grandfather were, I believe, brothers. And my brothers and sisters grew up calling him Uncle Arthur as a result of his closeness with my mother through great-grandfather Robert Hanna. So there you go.
Well, that's a Lord of mercy. So all of us are connected some kind of how, right?
That's right. Yeah. Six degrees of separation.
Indeed. All right. Thank you very much, Chairman. I appreciate your time and effort as usual. Be safe, and we'll talk to you again sometime.
Right. Thank you so much. All right.
Producer, let's go ahead and take a short break. And we'll be back in just a few minutes to close out the show. So that was Fred Mitchell giving us his thoughts on the late A.D. Hanna, who passed away last week at the age of 93, and to whose family, once again, I extend my best wishes, deepest sympathies. Producer, we'll take that break and be right back.
God, can you believe this? We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody's yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
But we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Beulah. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything? Guns? Where they hiding the drugs? Who shoot who? Who part of which gang? Or who dislike us?
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas, and everybody gonna want to come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands, or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
Your print needs are short or long run, digital printing, wide format, or print consultation. Call the best. Call Printmasters. They have been in the printing business since 1957 and are a printing company with a tradition of excellence. The goal of Printmasters is to provide their clients with the highest levels of personal professional service at an affordable price, along with the technology that makes working together efficient and easy. Lamination, business cards, flyers, posters, window and floor decals, and just a few of the digital
digitized printing services offered at Printmasters. Call 302-2361 and print with the best. Print with Printmasters.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for today. I've thoroughly enjoyed our time together. Unfortunately, today we are celebrating the 17th anniversary of the birth of my first child, one Maya Camille Parker. And I am absquatulating now, as a matter of fact. But I didn't want the day to go by without an great celebrate the most honorable A.D. Hannah, who is a mentor to me, a friend, and a hero, someone I look up to tremendously. Really want to get into that Bahamianization thing, but today it wasn't to be. So God bless you, and I apologize for robbing you of 50 minutes of our wonderful conversation. Go and be with your families, and that's what I'm going to do. So God bless, and see you next week. You did a fantastic job.